This is a great day in Tennessee football history.
Our football program has the history, the facilities, the tradition, and the resources to play with anyone, anytime, and that's what we're going to do again.
They low down, they dirty, they some snitches, and I hate Philip Fulmer. I hate their colors.
I have been a rich man, and I have been a poor man, and I choose rich.
This is, I guess, the inaugural episode of the Big Orange Big Bets podcast. We'll see how things go with the audio, see if we actually end up going with, the recordings for this and go from there. I've got Nick and Chris on the line. Let's start things off. How do we feel about the West Virginia game? It was a bit of a sluggish start, but, you know, we covered in the end.
Yeah, it was good to see the Vols back playing their style of basketball. We, the beginning was rough, but it just shows the resiliency of the team and how, you know, Barnes has been rough on them the last 3-4 games, rightfully so. And I think it finally kicked into gear, but we're still missing Admiral for the third game in a row. And, you know, we're just lucky to have Grant Williams playing the way he is.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The start was slow, and I think the crowd was starting to get a little restless too. But we finished strong. The truth of the matter is West Virginia is not a very good team, although they did just beat Kansas, who is our only loss. So, I mean, obviously we went in there and we ended up covering the game. I think it was 14.5. We ended up winning by 17.
Backdoor cover.
Yeah, backdoor cover, but we got there nonetheless.
The line opened at 16.5. Okay. We ended up covering pretty much any line you could have taken.
Yeah.
Which is a good look. I think we knew going in that West Virginia was not a very good basketball team, but they were consistent in what they were doing, except for their lineups. I think they had 13 different lineups going into Tennessee's game, but they played the same style. They beat Kansas. Kansas hasn't been the same since they lost. I don't know if they're going to get to that point either. Without them, they just look lost. They don't have that same presence underneath the basket.
If I can add something there, you know, it hurt losing Kyle Alexander. He played 12 minutes. He ended up fouling out 6 minutes left in the second half. And he's averaging 1.95 blocks a game, which is 48th in the nation. And losing him on, you know, minute restrictions due to fouls really affected that game.
Yeah, that's true. I think that, you know, going into that game, you look at Tennessee comes out after, you know, a close game with Alabama, an overtime, you know, barn burner with Vanderbilt, and you're looking at a team that needs to come in and just take care of business like they did earlier in the season. And we kind of saw them do that. They came out slow, but I wasn't upset with shot selection. I wasn't, you know, thinking we were playing rough in offense, you know, in that first 10 minutes. Shots weren't falling, but I was, for the most part, pretty happy with that selection. And I think that you kind of saw once they got down, they said, okay, you know, we're still playing our style of ball. Shots will start to hit, but let's not let this lead grow. And, I mean, you saw people like Lamonte turn into what we've always known as a lockdown defender and shut them down. They scored, 2 points in the last 10 minutes, 27 seconds of that half?
Yeah. So
that's really what I think that, you know, we're hoping to see more out of as we move forward is – you know, the team's going to struggle. Shots aren't always going to fall. Schofield's going to do whatever Schofield's been doing in the last few games and just not be able to hit. You know, he'll get out of that slump at some point. But it's good to see, I think, that we, you know, we were able to lock down and then just really run the things in the second half.
Yeah, I really like seeing how well Lamonte played, given he got the start today, or Saturday, I guess, rather. That's a little different lineup than we're used to seeing, probably because he's been hurt for most of the year. But looking at his numbers, I mean, he shot 8-for-10 from the field, 3-from-5 from three, had 23 points. And like you were saying, he is a lockdown defender. Little undersized to be playing the two, in my opinion, but he gets the job done. And it was great to see him, you know, rise to the occasion when he got the start on Saturday.
The one thing that worries me about Lamonte, and we saw it a bit in the Vandy game, is that I feel like there's a couple of times that he tries too hard to be that lockdown defender.
Yeah.
Like he thinks he's turned anyone. And especially like in Vandy, when they started switching 1 through 5, all of a sudden Lamonte would catch himself under the basket on a guy that's got 6, 7, 8 inches on him. Rather than calling that, switching off, you can see him still trying to body up and make that play before the ball gets there. But like, it's not going to happen with that size difference. And so I'm hoping that that's something that as his shot gets back and gets a bit more confident in his play, he'll start realizing like, okay, I don't need to do it all on that end of the court defensively. Let me reach out and see if I can't, you know, get some help.
Right. Also, just going forward with that starting lineup, though, I think as we get closer to March and maybe even in the SEC and the NCAA tournament, I'd like to see Jordan Bowden finishing out those games. I know Lamonte and Yves are crucial pieces for us, but I think when you need your 5 best players out on the floor during crunch time, Bowden fits that role a little bit better than Lamonte or Yves does. Just my opinion, though.
I guess that's probably a pretty good transition into South Carolina. Do we think that we're going to see Pons at the 5 spot, or not the 5 spot, but be that 5th man to finish out the starting 5, or do you think we're going to get Lamonte or Bowden?
I think we're going to end up getting Bowden in that game. We're going to see a pretty healthy rotation between the 3 of them. You know, we have a rotation set. It really hasn't changed too much throughout the season. But I think Bowden just gives us that offensive presence that we need so much.
Yeah. Bowden can also defend very well. I think if there's anyone's game on this team that translates into the NBA, it's Jordan Bowden, kind of like, you know, Josh Richardson was a few years ago. But talking about South Carolina, it'll be interesting to see. Really, I really don't have a guess as to who will start. It seems like they're kind of mixing it up. Obviously, Lamonte worked well on Saturday. But this South Carolina game will be tough. And no matter who it is, you got to see them step up the way Lamonte did on Saturday. We need our wing players to step up in that game. South Carolina's got pretty good guards. I would say they're more of like a perimeter dominant team, although they have Chris Silva, who averages 7 rebounds a game. He's been there for, I feel like, 4 or 5 years now. He's been there a while.
I feel like he's the JT Barrett of basketball for me. Like, yeah. I feel like he's been in South Carolina for as long as I can remember, and he's been an absolute issue under the basket. He just powers through there. You know, we'll see if that continues. I assume it will. Silva's a pretty good player. I think that Bowden has picked up his game enough and been pushed that since he lost that starting spot that whether he actually gets the start or not in South Carolina, he knows that he's close to just claiming that spot back. And I think we'll see him kind of power through and try to really take over that game to show that, you know, he does deserve that spot and that he wants that spot.
True. One thing I want to also bring up. So the line right now, Tennessee opened at today, earlier today, is -9 for the game. It's a 6:30 tip Eastern time tomorrow night in Columbia. I just want to hear what you guys, if you're going to pick the Vols to cover 8.5, maybe 9, 9.5 points, whatever it ends up closing as. Because I'm a little skeptical on the line, given that South Carolina has been pretty good at home and the Vols have struggled recently, especially on the road.
So Frank Martin's a good coach. You know, we all know that. And I was looking at trends the other day, or this morning, actually. And so South Carolina's 4-7 at home against the spread this season. And Tennessee is 3-2 against the spread on the road. The more interesting stat is Tennessee's 5-0 over-under away from TBA, and South Carolina has hit the over 8 of the last 10 games at home. So the over and under set at 154.5 for this game. I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on. Not sure which way I'm leaning, but that's definitely a pretty high total for the Vols.
Yeah. For me, we've seen if Tennessee plays their solid game, and you hear commentators narrow on this a lot, when a team is taking on Tennessee that really needs to slow their game down, and really needs to try to get Tennessee to play less possessions. You know, you always talk about them trying to keep it in the 70s. And if Tennessee plays the kind of ball that they're wanting to, you know, I think you're going to see it push up into that 80, 85 range, you know, points scored. And I think that, that South Carolina is going to stay right there with them. So I would lean more towards the over on that. If you look at South Carolina recently, they're a very, like, pace-heavy team. And they kind of play the way the game is played. You know, if whoever they're playing is dropping a lot of shots, they're going to follow up and do the same. That's kind of how they keep themselves in it. They're not as much of a lockdown team. They play it, I feel like, the tempo that, that their opponent plays. And if Tennessee plays the game they want, I think they're going to be pushing that 80 to 85 range, which I'd lean towards the over there, but definitely not going to put it in my locks. As far as the actual spread goes, at -9, I think I'm taking the Gamecocks all day to cover that, probably as much down as 7 or even 6 and a hook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at what South Carolina's done, you know, the past few weeks, they just came off a close loss to Oklahoma State. They Auburn. They did get smacked by LSU, but they've played well. They beat a pretty solid Florida team early in the season. They beat Mississippi State before the wheels kind of fell off Mississippi State. You know, they didn't even play terribly against Michigan or Virginia.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be too hard on them. I haven't gotten to read as much breakdown as I want to on kind of how they're set up for this game. But I would definitely take them to cover and go ahead and take Tennessee on the money line. Obviously, I think the Vols are going to take this one, but I don't think it's going to be an easy one at all.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I second that. So every game but against Missouri, South Carolina has been an underdog, and they have outright won every one of those games but LSU, where they ended up losing by 22. And I think South Carolina for sure is going to put up a fight, and Tennessee comes out in the end. So I will second that. Moneyline Vols cover South Carolina.
Yeah, also, I'm the same way. I think the Vols will definitely win. And if I had to pick a spread, I'm liking South Carolina -9. I do also want to say, you mentioned Falcon, the Virginia loss they had at home. They're a pretty good team at home, 7-4. They've beaten ranked Mississippi State and Auburn. And I think comparing our game to the Virginia game, given it was in mid-December when they played Virginia, they lost by 17 and were held to only 52 points. That'll be a good measuring stick, I want to say. Now that the Vols have been ranked number one for over a week now, another top team, Virginia, comparing those two games and seeing how we each looked against the same opponent will say a lot, because looking ahead, I don't want to get ahead of, you know, just this game or the SEC, but Virginia is definitely a team we could be meeting in March in a very big game. And they're a team that, frankly, I'm a little bit scared of going down the road. And what do you guys think about that, looking at Virginia as a potential opponent and come like the Elite Eight or maybe in Final Four in March?
Chris, I'll let you take that first.
Virginia just plays, you know, suffocating defense. They take every offensive possession almost down to the buzzer. I mean, 22, 23 seconds at least holding the ball. And that's something that the Vols are going to have to figure out a way to beat if they do end up meeting up in March, because Tennessee has struggled. I mean, you've seen against Florida, you've seen against Vandy. They really hasn't been great in SEC play adjusting to other teams and being able to game plan at halftime.
I would agree. I think that Virginia, they play the same style of ball most every year, that suffocating defense. They like to play late in the shot clock, and if possible, get that open three, even if it's with, you know, 1-2 seconds left. You saw that not as much of a late in the shot clock game, but just in general, of the shots they were looking for against Florida, and Tennessee's defense struggled to really match up with that. However, the thing I'll say with this is I feel confident matching up with almost any team in the country right now. I feel like, you know, we're pretty strong in a lot of areas. The only team that I really don't want to play right now is the team that we've already played, and I really don't want to match up with Gonzaga again. After looking at how their shooters are, what they can do at full strength, I know that they're not sitting at the top of the rankings right now, but those are the people that I feel the least confident matching up with. I think that the Vols, will have a pretty fun time if they've got to take Zion down low and watching him try to body up and realize that he can't run over, Grant Schofield and Admiral, Grant and Schofield the same way that he can, other people kind of in this league. You know, when you start hitting guys that are that size, that are that old, and that know how to make or break it, I'm not scared to match up with that. Same with Virginia. I'm okay with that. But right now, if I had to pick one that I don't want to see us match up with, especially, maybe the 16 or the Elite Eight with a team, it's going to be Gonzaga right now.
Another one I'd like to add is Michigan State. They're sixth in the rankings, even though they did end up just dropping their last game. And Cassius Winston's the real deal. I think he's the best point guard in the NBA or in the NCAA, and will have a pretty good career when he ends up making the jump to the NBA. And, Izzo is
King of March.
King of March. And it's just, that would be an interesting matchup for sure.
Also, just tailing off that, I have flashbacks. I'm already starting to get nightmares to our Elite Eight team in 2008, I believe it was, when we ended up losing to Michigan State by 3. And I just remember, vividly in my mind, watching J.P. Prince make an awful pass to the wing, getting stolen, and then giving up the end one late game to put them up 5. And that was just I could see us running in Michigan State again. Also, Gonzaga, like you were mentioning, Falcon, definitely a team in March you have to stay worried for. But I guess you just got to go one game at a time. What about picks that you like for tomorrow, maybe college basketball, NBA? Even NHL, do you guys got any good ones?
So right now, I haven't looked a ton into outside of college basketball. I'm pretty locked in right now. My one lock for tomorrow, the game that I feel pretty confident in, is Alabama -2 over Mississippi State. Mississippi State has not come out to be the team that everyone really thought they were going to be at the start of the season. They were ranked for weeks and weeks and weeks, and they're still sitting at 22 right now, but they've kind of just dropped off. Whereas Alabama, they started out, they beat Kentucky, and then were kind of like sleeping. You didn't know what they were doing. And then, they come out, they play a tough game against Tennessee, at Tennessee. Looks like the real deal, but then again, you have Petty who's shooting out of his mind. Okay, is it all up this one guy? And then they go in and they absolutely thrash Ole Miss. I think it was 74-53 the next game, 3 days later. And Ole Miss is really, been a come up team in the SEC. They did drop a game to Baylor, in that game this past weekend, but I'm gonna take them -2 over Mississippi State. I think that Mississippi State is just not going to be able to handle kind of what Alabama is bringing, especially if Petty and some of those guys can start making those shots. I just don't see it. Alabama's been a lot stronger team, especially over the last 5 weeks.
What about you, Chris?
I really like Buffalo cover at home against Ball State, -12. I love Buffalo. They're my favorite MAC basketball team. Unfortunately, the last 2 weeks, they haven't been too good to me going just 1-3 against the spread. But they're at home, and I really think they're going to end up getting back and hitting their stride against Ball State and cover by 12. Another one I'm keeping my eye on is UNC at Georgia Tech. UNC is favored by 8.5, and the over is set at 148. North Carolina is averaging 88 points a game. I could see him putting up 100 easy on Georgia Tech. And Georgia Tech did just play Duke pretty close. I think it was a 12-point game when the spread was 22.5. But I think UNC blows it open early and just pours it on at the end.
Yeah, I like both of those as well. I think Georgia Tech is prone to giving up lots of points, especially against good in conference opponents like Duke and North Carolina. The game that I like Kentucky -9.5 at Vandy tomorrow. It's the 9 p.m. game on ESPN. I think Kentucky, coming off the big win they had against Kansas on Saturday, they're riding a lot of momentum. And this is just notoriously about the time of the season where John Calipari coach teams just start to click. We've seen it so many times with Kentucky and all their freshmen. I think they want to go into Vandy, make a statement, especially after Tennessee had a close, barely escaped last week, had a close game, and frankly probably should have lost. They're going to go into Vandy, smash them on their home gym, win by double digits. The two other games I had written down, more so just like fun, interesting picks. Kansas minus one at Texas. They are missing Azubuike. That's why this line is so narrow. And it is at Texas, a rivalry game. Texas isn't very good. They're coming off a loss to Georgia. And Georgia, as we've seen, is not very good either, I don't think. Kansas minus one right now is where the line sits. That'll be a fun pick to keep your eye on. And also UNLV plus 9.5 at home versus Nevada. That's another rivalry game. I guess I got three rivalry games on here, but UNLV's at home. This one might be a one you want to sprinkle a little bit of money line on, because the money line will be pretty fat, probably plus 300, 400, somewhere in there, 3 to 4 to 1. And UNLV, they're struggling this year, but it's notoriously a basketball school. They're going to have fans there. And it's, like I said, it's a rivalry game. Anything can happen. So those are my three that I like for tomorrow.
I really like that last pick. Nevada is the most inflated team in the top 25. They really haven't played anybody. And when they do, it always comes down close. And at the end, they have those brothers that are great basketball players. But Nevada is not the program that the ranking says it is.
Yeah.
Chris, do you have any fun picks? You know, anything that you really think gonna drive home? Anything crazy?
Yeah, like I said, the UNC Georgia Tech game. I mean, it'll be a fun game to watch. I think UNC is gonna put up 90 plus, and that just means Georgia Tech has to score 60 for that over 148 to hit. And it's just a good basketball game to watch. You know, UNC and Roy Williams.
Got it. So I'm gonna say my one kind of, I'm not calling this a lock by any means, a fun one. For me, betting unders is always a fun sweat. I think more so in football than basketball. But Georgia, Arkansas, over-under is currently sitting at 152.5. I don't see those two teams really even getting close to 152.5. Now, granted, Vegas is much better than I am. I thought that 150 was a little low for the Tennessee-West Virginia game, and I believe that total ended up at 149. You know, we'll see what Vegas has to say after this week is over. But, you know, 152.5, I feel like is quite a lot for both those teams. I don't see that game going, you know, 80 to 78. That's much more to me of like a 69, 65 kind of game. So I really like the under on that game. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I second that.
So I got a question for you guys. Tom Crean, do you think he was the answer for Georgia basketball after they fired Mark Fox?
I definitely do, only because Mark Fox came into nobody and left a nobody. How long was he there? Like 10, 12 years?
A while.
Right? He was there a while. Didn't really accomplish anything. Tom Crean is a good coach. I've followed him for a while. He coached Dwayne Wade back at Marquette and then moved on to Indiana. Had a couple top five teams there. They'd never made a Final Four or won a championship, but he coached a lot of great players at a big-time program. Victor Oladipo, Cody Zeller. He's an elite premier coach, I believe, especially in the SEC. We're starting to see more coaches like that follow into our league. Bruce Pearl came back. Ben Howland is at Mississippi State. He came from UCLA. Another top-tier program. This is kind of the era we live in now that we're shifting towards is focus more on SEC basketball. It's getting better and better every year. And I think Tom Crean will have a lot of success at Georgia. Maybe not as much as Rick Barnes will have at Tennessee when it's all said and done, hopefully. But he's definitely the right coach for a program like that, in my opinion, given his expertise.
I kind of agree as well. I don't know that the answer is the right word, because I think that's something that you usually have in hindsight of, this team was or you know, this coach was the answer for everything they needed, or he wasn't. Right now, I think he's a good pick for them.
Yeah.
Something that he he's going to have to get done is he needs to pressure UGA to fix up Stegman, fix up their facilities, because as of now, Georgia, you know, Georgia is not an elite or even middle tier basketball school. Stegman is an outdated high school gym, and they have Atlanta to work with. So once they start improving the facilities and improving their brand, I think they'll be able to recruit Atlanta very well.
All right. So one last thing I want to touch on with SEC basketball before we wrap up with just our Super Bowl picks. Mm-hmm. You know, Will Wade was a guy that a lot of people wanted to see come to Tennessee. He seemed like he might be the answer before Rick Barnes came in, and Rick is doing great things. Will Wade's got a heck of a program down at LSU right now, and they haven't lost an SEC game yet. You know, Tennessee's got a pretty backloaded schedule as we go into to late February. We're going to need LSU to drop a couple because, you know, I'm not thinking Tennessee's going to be perfect rolling into the SEC tournament. I would like to see Tennessee win it outright in the regular season to the SEC. How do we feel about LSU, and do we see any games coming up that maybe you know, could be a struggle for Tennessee if LSU is still powering through?
There's no doubt that Will Wade's a good coach. I mean, he did what Shaka Smart couldn't do at VCU. You know, he won a A-10 conference regular season championship. And at the end of the day, I don't know if LSU is there quite yet, but I think down the road, maybe next year, 2 years, that's going to be a team that is clicking like Tennessee is and should be fun to watch them rise in the SEC.
Yeah, I definitely see where you're saying how Will Wade was a fan favorite, given that he was, you know, he's from Nashville. He coached at Chat, had a lot of success kind of at smaller levels. But going forward for Tennessee, I think tomorrow's a game that we need to, you know, kind of keep on our heels, only because it's away. South Carolina's good at home. And then really other than that, I think that you hit it right on the head, LSU. When we play them in Baton Rouge, that'll be a tough game. I'm looking at it right now. It's a 12 p.m. tip-off, so early games on the road, you can always get caught sleeping. But just going back to Will Wade, in the end, obviously, I think everyone's pretty happy with Rick Barnes. But at the time of the hire, I was also pleased with Rick Barnes. My only thing that I was a little concerned about was his age at the time. I don't know how many years he has left, given, you know, he's in his 60s. He's been around the block a few times. But, you know, he coached a lot of great players. If you look at, you know, what he did at Texas, I know he only made the Elite Eight like twice, maybe even the Final Four just once. But, he, you know, he coached Kevin Durant, LaMarcus Aldridge, Tristan Thompson. You know, high-level players in the NBA came and played with Rick Barnes at Texas. And he was there for a while, and he, you know, had established a pretty good program. And this has just got to be the year the Vols get it done, you know. This is the year we have all the pieces, and we are a top 10 team, legitimately probably a top 3 team. We'll see how it ends, but at the end of the day, go Vols, and I think the Rick Barnes was the right hire.
Well, I mean, I think we'd all agree there. I was just curious, you know, LSU's going to be a pretty big matchup, you know, as things are looking right now. Going down the stretch for the regular season title. Chris, do you have anything else to add before we wrap up with our Super Bowl picks?
I do not.
All right. So, unfortunately, after the things went last week, we're looking at another Patriots Super Bowl. You know, a lot of people in the country not happy about it. You know, maybe if the Chiefs had a defense, we wouldn't have to worry about this, but here we are. Currently, I've got the Patriots sitting at 2.5, favored by 2.5.
Yeah, 2.5.
My opinion is if the Patriots are winning, they're winning by more than 2.5. In my opinion, I think the play here is going to be on the Rams' money line just to win it straight up. I would like to see that offense just finally put, you know, a Super Bowl Patriots team out of commission early. I don't want to see Tom Brady get that, oh, we know how this ends storyline going into the fourth quarter. That's going to be my play there is, you know, if I could take the parlay, I would parlay the spread and the money line on the Rams just for payout and, like, you know, hope's sake so that, Tom Brady doesn't, you know, doesn't get another one. But if I'm going to be smart about it, I'll take the Patriots 2.5. That's going to be the my lock-in that I'll take.
Yeah, I completely agree with on that. If the Patriots win, they're going to cover 2.5, and I would say that's probably the most likely outcome. But the play I'm going to do, and you said that you also liked, was the Rams money line. I look at both teams, and just looking at this season, the Rams, in my opinion, have the better team of the two. Obviously, with Belichick and Brady in any big game, that's going to come into your mind and probably going to come down to the wire, and the Patriots will probably get the ball with a chance to win. But this is the Super Bowl. This Rams team is one of the best. They went 13-3 in the regular season. All three losses came to playoff teams. They're a very good football team. And at the end of the day, if the better team wins, it will be the Rams. And that money line's at a pretty good value right now.
So I'm kind of biased here. You know, I don't want to see the Patriots win a Super Bowl in my city. And I'm very glad that I won't watch the Saints win a Super Bowl in my city. So I'm on the Rams here. And a prop bet that I really like, I mean, I love it. It's sitting at plus 140 right now. It's the total sacks. It's will the Rams sack Brady at 1.5. And I really like that under at plus 140. Brady went the entire game against the Chiefs without being sacked. And he throws the ball so quick. I mean, within 3 seconds. And I really don't think the Rams are going to be able to get to him and bring him down more than twice.
Even with Aaron Donald and the Dolphins, yeah.
I think Brady, you know, he's at that age. He can't be hit. He knows that. And he has Edelman running slants across the field. He has Gronk, people that he can get to real quick. And I think he's going to get rid of that ball within 2-3 steps in a couple seconds. And I really think that's the prop of the Super Bowl.
Is that prop bet over under 3 sacks?
Over under 1.5.
Over under 1.5. Okay. I like that bet. My thing would be this is with Brady, he knows that he can't get hit. He knows that he's got a check down always. I feel like 85% of the time, his go-to pass is the check down. You see him make passes to wide open receivers 3 yards down the field all the time. That's kind of his game, and then they bust it up. I'll stand with you on that. I like that. I might take that. But that's going to lead probably to the Patriots to pick up another Super Bowl if he's ever able to just keep shredding that defense.
At this point, I mean, it's great to witness greatness. You know, everybody hates the Patriots, especially in Tennessee. They hate Brady due to the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady rivalry. And at the end of the day, it's just fun to watch greatness. But at the end of the day, like I said, I want the Rams. I think the Rams cover. And I think Rams money line's a great play as well.
I saw a pretty interesting take on Brady. That's the picture of him holding up the 5 rings. Said if he gets one this year, if he puts the ring on his other hand, we're in for a lot of trouble because he's not stopping anytime soon. If he double fingers one and puts the 6th ring on another finger with all the other rings, then he's probably retiring within 2 years.
Yeah. The way Peyton Manning did it on his last year, winning and going out on top, is pretty legendary. And I don't know if Brady will be able to one up that or not.
And drinking Budweiser after the game, you know, Brady's not going to be drinking any beer anytime soon. And it was nice to see Peyton get back to his roots, drinking nice Budweiser after riding off into the sunset with a ring.
All right. Anything else before we wrap up?
No, I'm good.
I guess that's it. That's the first ever episode of the Big Orange Big Bets podcast. Obviously, we will, we'll keep a tally of how we're looking on bets.
Yeah.
Definitely going to have to keep a separate tally between locks and fun bets because fun bets can go the wrong way often.
Yeah.
I think, and I'm not certain how much I'm going to put into this, but at the very least, I'm going to keep up with it. I might start fading every single one of Tom Pernelli's
locks of the day.
Well, trust the process picks. And I like Tom. He's hilarious on Twitter.
Yeah.
And college football, prior to this season, he was pretty dang good. This season was a struggle, and his basketball picks have been questionable.
Yeah.
He took Notre Dame at, well, I believe it was plus 14 against Duke tonight. And the second I saw it come out, I just thought, it's like, not Notre Dame, man. They're not that's going to keep it within 14. I might start I'm fading Tom Fernelli line just to see where that money can go.
Yeah, true.
Somebody that's caught my attention over the last couple weeks with NBA player props is Joe Osborne. He's someone that puts a lot of research into it, looks at the trends, and more times than not, his player props hits, and it's usually for points per game. And that's someone to follow. It's at JTF Oz on Twitter, and that's the guy I've been following the most recently in regards to the NBA.
Nice. All right, guys. So I guess we've wrapped up. It's the end of the podcast.